Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Okay, Audrey, thank you very much. You got us on one more time, and those of you who listened last week on Thursday didn't hear anything, right? We moved the show to Friday last Thursday for reasons, and our thousands of listeners were probably confused, or maybe our two listeners were, whatever. But anyway, thank you very much, Audrey, for getting us set up, and this is Thursday night, and it's 9 p.m., on July 27th, and away we go here again. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and what we're going to do tonight is discuss another book. I'll have a book presentation from booktv.org, and remember, that's the place. I still talk to people occasionally who have never heard of booktv.org, and I said, look, you don't have time to read a best-selling top book or a book that's on a subject that's precise and related to some subject that you are interested in. It's probably on booktv.org. They're available, all of these things running from 50 to an hour and a half, these video clips, they're all available free to listen to. And that's what we're going to do tonight. Tonight we're going to be listening to Bernadette Rabai. She's a policy analyst for the Prison Policy Institute. The Prison Policy Institute. We need a lot of policies for them. And she'll be discussing mass incarceration in the United States. And I hope she defends it, because that's a term that's slid around all over the place and used not very accurately most of the time in terms of what it really represents. But anyway, she's really debating the issue, and the Policy Initiative Institute is debating the institute the issue of how many people should we put in prison. And one of the things that I'll say right now here before we even get started on that is that there's a lot of confusion in the United States about who goes to prison. And most people in prison, do you know or believe, they've been there before. So these aren't first-time people. They get probation and sometimes probation, and that's all over the United States, depending on the crime, but then they go to prison. Then they get out, and guess what they do? They commit a crime again. If you have the answer to all this, I've been a criminal justice professor, taught criminology for centuries almost in large universities and community colleges, and we don't know the answer. I mean, we simply don't know the answer, and the one that works, and it costs us money, but when you put somebody behind bars and you keep them in prison, and guess what? They can't rape, they can't rob. I was going to say they can't deal in drugs, but that's not true. I'll have a news story about that later on tonight in terms of one of the prisons. But anyway, that's going to be the subject tonight, and it's a real serious one for all of us. It has to do with hurting people. It has to do with redirecting people's lives, these inmates. And I've taught many of them over the years who turned their life around. And we don't always know the answer as to what happened relative to that. But anyway, that's what we're doing tonight. And I think you should probably enjoy listening to this conversation. And by the way, if you want to do your own radio show, you can do it on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.org and sign up. And within minutes, you can be broadcasting a half hour, 15 minutes, an hour radio show worldwide in streaming audio. Isn't that incredible? So any person, any interest group, any organization can actually do that. And there's a lot of really good shows on Blog Talk Radio. Some are very famous and are listed on podcastdirectory.com and all that. And they work with social media. And, you know, I don't do that for a whole bunch of reasons. but anyway, I'm going to be able to do other things. I think you've seen a few people texting today who can't get their mind off of the little phone in their hand. And it's good, it's useful, but it's also a little mind-bending. It has some ill effects, and part of those have to do with driving cars, which I'm sure you've heard. But we have people fall into holes and on sidewalks in large cities in the United States because they're texting. Okay, that's enough. That's enough of that stuff. Let's go ahead and take a look at some of the news tonight. And we'll try to hurry through this because I want you to hear a lot about the policy procedures and ideas relative to mass incarceration. And we'll be getting into what that is here shortly. So let's take a look. And we'll start off here with Baltimore. This is today, I think, it happened. It took just minutes for rising tension, they said, to overflow in Baltimore. The council member, city council, had issued several warnings to unruly attendees, but police were called to move them away. And what Baltimore is doing, they said a 29 and a 27-year-old were arrested and they'll face charges. But what Baltimore is doing, they're trying to pass a law that will give a mandatory one-year sentence for anyone caught in possession of a firearm that's not legal for them to possess. In other words, if you're one of the street thugs that's carrying a gun, we catch you. We don't catch you for nothing else. You're going to prison for a year. You're going to be locked up for a year, or maybe the local jail. But the bill has many people who disagree with that. Oh, come on, let's give them a second chance. But you know what? If you take the guns out of hands of people who have wrongdoing on their mind, always, you're going to have a few people shot and killed. And what's Baltimore's record this year? Well, they don't have it there, but they're just worried about the number of people being shot and killed in Baltimore. It's just an incredible number. Anyway, that's an important thing to pay attention to. Ohio executed someone this week in Lucasville. A child killer was put to death with no apparent complications. And Ohio had this is their first execution in 3.5 years. And that last one triggered an uproar because the guy, I guess, flipped and flopped. This is that three drug policy. And the big debate over who knows how many things, but one of them was over the first drug, whether or not it actually, you know, takes the pain away from the next two, and then the execution itself that's coming up. They don't take the pain away from the other drugs. But anyway, this is the one that gets you started. In their first execution in 2014, an inmate gasped and snorted repeatedly during a procedure that took 26 minutes and involved a never-before-tried drug combination. So the drug midazolam, can anyone speak drug language, drugology or whatever it is? Can you believe all these pharmaceutical drugs and the names? Where do they get them? But anyway, midazolam, M-I-D-A-Z-O-L-A-M, was a sedative used in some problematic executions in Ohio, Arkansas, and Arizona. But anyway, they got away with this, and this guy died in 10 minutes after giving his final statement. He didn't show any signs of distress, but defense attorneys are saying that's not true. Public defender, he contended that Phillips' execution was not problem-free. It just looked that way. And anyway, we got condition there that's interesting. And one of the women related to what he did. Yeah, how about that? He was 43 years old, condemned to die for the 1993 rape and slaying of his girlfriend's three-year-old daughter, Sheila Marie Evans. I mean, can you believe it? Yes, I know. We must have a heart, and maybe we could turn this guy around, but that's the law. And there are pros and cons for execution of prisoners, and this one certainly fell on the pro side. Okay, let's take a look at Chicago homicides this year. Like, 6 people were killed and 35 others this past weekend in Chicago, as the number of homicides continues to outpace last year. You see that President Trump, along with it's Kelly, isn't it? Yeah. No, not Kelly. Oh, sorry, I can't think of his name. But anyway, what they're doing is they're trying to get these gang members in these cities. But that's not all that's going on in Chicago. But there have been at least 391 homicides this year in Chicago. This is 4 more than last year when the violence reached levels not seen in 2 decades. I mean, I could give you details on where they happened and on the streets and all that. I won't do that. But can you imagine living in Chicago and driving home from work, let's say at 8 o'clock at night, or going to get on the train to go home? I mean, my Lord, it's just absolutely incredible. Well, here's one. I think it's the future. It's actually being done other places. But a Wisconsin company is about to become the first in the U.S., to offer microchip implants to its employees. And they're going to put the implants on them, apparently so, and their break room markets, and they can actually go and they can swipe like a credit card and get, you know, something to eat, whatever. But anyway, they're going to be a bunch of them. Each chip costs $300, and the company's picking up the tab. They're implanted between a person's thumb and their forefinger. And they added that the data is both encrypted and secure. And there's no GPS tracking. Oh, please. That's what they said. But the company said 3 Square Market Chief, that's the name of the company, or 3 Square Market, excuse me. The chief executive officer, Todd Westby, said there will be no tracking. But what they can do with this thing is break rooms. They can go into a kiosk and they can buy stuff and things like that. But open doors, all those sort of things. No thanks. Okay, here's something about gun purchases. Up to 59% of African-American households now viewing gun as a necessity. Isn't that something? And that is up from way up from years ago. And African-American women have outpaced all other races and genders in terms of securing concealed carry permits in Texas between 2000 and 2016. And according to demographic information released by the state, the founder of the National African American Gun Association says that politics and police shootings, such as the recent slaying of Philando Castile, have caused a sudden upswing in gun ownership. And in his opinion, owning a gun is perhaps the only way that African American men and women can truly protect themselves? Well, there is another way. You can take some of the African-American men and women and the Anglo-Saxon-American men and women who commit crimes and hurt people and put them in prison and don't let them out. Or if they kill people, you could execute them. I think you've heard that, but it's too simple for us to understand. Oh, no, it's going to cost us more money to incarcerate them. No, it isn't. The money that we pay for the extra crimes when they're out, finding an end to those and prosecutions and all that, and then the harm that they cause people, the theft and on and on and on, it's cheaper to keep them in a prison cell for, you know, $150 a month or $200, whatever it is nowadays. But anyway, that's very unusual that that's now happening. This one woman, Joneva Johnson, she's a 50-year-old student, and she said the decision to buy a gun was a long time coming. At the age of 17, she said she witnessed her ex-boyfriend from high school shoot and kill her new boyfriend. Approximately 30 years later, her daughter was sexually assaulted in their own home. One of my things that happened next to the University of Cincinnati years ago when I was there, one of my students, he investigated a rape of a woman that broke, a man who broke into the house and apartments right along the street bordering the university and sexually assaulted. And he advised her, he said, what you ought to do is get a gun. And a number of weeks later, I think maybe 2 months or something like that, the same guy came back to sexually assault her. And guess what? She shot him and killed him. He will not recidivate. He's done. But they work. I mean, what is it? 300,000 people use a firearm, to ward off a felon. And most of the time they don't shoot. That's only like 3%. But they use the gun and they feel safe and they are safe. A lot of times. Do we have accidents with them? Do people who are gun owners and licensed sometimes make mistakes? Not very often, but occasionally they do. Anyway, here's one of the things that's interesting here. Locally in Seneca County, Ohio, Northwest Ohio, our sheriff is going to contract with two little villages, Bettsville and New Regal, to provide police services. You say, well, why? If they're in the county, they can all, well, they had their own little police department that was at part-time. There are part-time police departments. I don't know if you know about that. We should do a show on that sometime with their police. But anyway, they decided to do that, and Bettsville is going to pay $73,000 a year for a minimum of 40 hours of weekly service. So that's not a lot when you figure 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Regal is going to pay $12,000, New Regal, $480 for a minimum of 10 hours of weekly service. And Sheriff Eckleberry, he's done a very nice job here in our county, works very hard, keeps the prisoners inside the jail. That's one of the many tasks that sheriffs do, is willing to do this. I should also mention something about sheriff. We talked about it on shows years ago, but it is, to many people, it is the best role to play in American criminal justice. Because guess what? You're in charge. You are elected by the people. Only the people can remove you from office. And the only other thing that happens that makes any difference in your life is your budget. So your county commissioners could pay you less money, but in reality, you are in charge, and that's a little different than being a police chief with all the city council members and mayors and governors and all these people interfering. You can't do that when you're sheriff. Sheriff is in charge, so remember that. Anybody that's listening and wants a good criminal justice job, go get elected sheriff somewhere. It works, and I've taught many of them and know many of them. Okay. I hate to bring this up, and he won't even mind because he's a great leader, an excellent leader, and did not try to hide this. But our police chief in Tiffin, Ohio, Frederick Stevens, a former student where I taught at Tiffin University, was sighted with assured clear distance ahead after an accident on West Perry Street. He was driving his wife's 2016 Ford Escape west on Perry Street behind a 2016 Dodge Ram 3500 Was that a pickup truck, Audrey? Oh, no. That brings up repass. That's the sickness I suffer from. Red pickup anxiety syndrome. They're not always red, but everywhere I go, I'm surrounded by red pickup trucks. I think I need help. But anyway, he was driving west on Prairie Street, according to the police. Stephen said he looked away for a moment from this car ahead and did not see that the Dodge Ram had stopped, the report said. And the Ford Escape struck the Dodge Ram. Stevens and Bird were not hurt, and this occurred about 4:05 p.m. And fortunately, no one was hurt, but I think that's still the number one cause of accidents, a short clear distance, people behind in the rear. Part of that has to do with speed, but you'll often say the reason was a short clear distance. But I can't believe these people want to drive 3 inches off your bumper. Are they sane? I mean, how in the world do they think they can stop their car if you had to stop for any reason? Don't get me started. Okay. Drones in prisons. A drone carrying cell phones, tobacco, and marijuana crashed in the yard at Washington State Prison, according to the Department of Corrections. This is a growing problem. Drones have become the newest way inmates have used to get contraband that can be sold to other prisoners for significant profit. You know that this goes on, and sometimes they get prison guards involved in this, and they get caught and get sent to jail too. But anyway, the spokeswoman for the prison system said Tuesday a drone crashed to the ground of the prison near Davisboro around 4:45 p.m. This is in Washington State. She could not say how many cell phones or how much tobacco and marijuana were recovered. No one inside or outside the prison has been connected to this drone. Well, it didn't just fly by and, you know, to sell products. Somebody knew something about it. But anyway, that's it for our stuff tonight. So let's do, have you heard our blonde joke for tonight? Our blonde joke for tonight is, why do blondes stare at orange juice containers for hours on end? I'll say it again. Why do blondes, this is blonde men, by the way, stare at orange juice containers for hours on end? Does anyone know? Because the containers say concentrate. Okay, they say concentrate. All right, here's the green tip for tonight. Some of you have already done it. Stop using paper. Be done with it. Don't use paper anymore. If you have paper, recycle it, but don't use paper and use more erasers. Do you think you could make a fortune selling classy erasers that would help you save paper? You could use the paper over and over again like a chalkboard. Oh, well, maybe not. Maybe not. Okay, that's our news for tonight, our blonde joke and our green tip. And so let's go and listen to this discussion of mass incarceration in the prisons in the United States. Give me a little while to get this thing set up, and I think you'll enjoy listening. This is an important topic for us. This is the Washington Journal on Book TV.
Journal continues.
Bernadette Revoy is joining us from Los Angeles. She is a senior policy analyst with the Prison Policy Initiative. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We want to talk about mass incarceration in America, but let's begin with your organization and what you represent.
So we're the Prison Policy Initiative. We're a national research and advocacy organization focused on criminal justice issues. We both do research on the criminal justice system, including just showing who is incarcerated in the U.S., where and for what offenses, and also specific advocacy campaigns. So, for example, we do work on the issue of prison gerrymandering, which is where people are counted for the purposes of redistricting, as well as other issues such as the high price of phone calls, and we've been doing a lot of advocacy with the Federal Communications Commission on that issue.
Let's put some information on the screen to start our conversation and discussion. Currently, there's 2.3 million Americans in jails at the local, state, and federal level. Also, the pretrial policies driving often the jail growth. One in five incarcerated locked up for a drug offense. Over a million for drug possession arrests each year. Most of the incarcerations are young people locked up for nonviolent offense.
I should make the point, when they say they're locked up for a drug offense, that doesn't mean that they didn't commit other offenses. Sorry to interrupt.
57,000 are behind bars due to immigration offenses.
Good.
If you look at those numbers, what stands out?
I think the first is definitely how much state policy drives mass incarceration. So oftentimes it can be easy to focus on the federal level, for example. But actually, when we're looking at the criminal justice system, the largest slice is definitely state prisons, followed by local jails, which are also getting more attention recently because of practices like pretrial detention, as was mentioned. But I think really the first is that state policies drive mass incarceration.
And one figure that stood out in your report, that 70% of those in local jails are there for without any charges. They haven't been convicted of anything.
Exactly. So that is a national figure, which is too high, really too high. So that is a combination of a few different folks.
But they have a big discussion about whether they should be let out on bail. It doesn't just happen. They keep them there because they're dangerous.
So there are the people who have just gotten in jail, so they haven't had the opportunity to pay money bail yet in order to get in order to wait for trial from home. And there are the people who just can't afford the money bail. So they can't pay whatever amount that is, which can range from a few hundred dollars to a few thousand dollars. It really depends on the offense and a lot of very specific details. But because they can't afford that, they have to wait for their trial date from the jail. And so that is a huge driver of jail policies in this country. And in some places, it's even higher than 70%.
So let's look at those numbers again. This is local jail population, those who are being held without being convicted of anything. Non-convicted, a number of 443,000, approximately, according to the Prison Policy Initiative. Those with convictions, 187,000. So let me ask you, what is the timeline between the moment in which you are in custody?
I hope she mentioned the fact that some of them are in prison and not let out because of bail are serious offenders who have killed, who have robbed, who have raped. It's not somebody that just stole, you know, a cap at Walmart.
Incarcerated in a local jail, and then your trial and either your guilt or innocence is affirmed.
So that's a really tricky question, actually, because there are thousands of local jurisdictions, so it can really vary. For example, here in California, jails have really taken a new character because of the prison overcrowding that happened here. Jails, you know, here jails can house people for years, which is really uncommon. Generally, people spend under a year for jails, and the big difference between jails and prisons is that jails are used for minor offenses and for sentences under a year, and people go to prison when they have longer sentences and usually more serious crimes. But you could really spend...
The worst criminals we have are held in jail until their trial transpires. So some of the people in that statistic are actually very, very serious criminals.
Some days in jail before your trial date, months in jail, and unfortunately sometimes years. But it's probably more common that you would spend days and months before your trial date.
And you break it down between local, state, and federal prisons. Let's just take a snapshot at those being incarcerated in federal prisons. Right now about 97,000 for drug offenses, another 71,000 for public disorder issues, violent criminals totaling 14,000, property and theft at 12,000, and 1,000 for those convicted of other crimes. Are we doing enough to make sure that those who are in prisons are able, when they do leave, to get back into the mainstream of America and into the workforce?
Absolutely not. So one of the issues is our report does a great job at showing a snapshot of the criminal justice system. What we can sometimes forget is that
folks, from the 1960s to the 1990s, we went on with this argument on and on and on. Let's help them. Let's rehab. Let's counsel. Let's do yoga. Let's do, you know, on and on and on. And then we found out, and Mayor Giuliani in New York was a very good example, and the police chiefs that they hired in New York City, they plummeted the crime rate in that city. And you know what they did? You've heard me say it before, as other cities did. Our crime rate nationwide went down tremendously. It's because we locked up the criminals.
This is just how many people are locked up on any given day. There are also the many more people who are cycling in and out of facilities. So that is one of the key issues that maybe isn't portrayed as well in this report, which are the people who are getting out of both prison and jail and what resources might be available for them. So they run into a bunch of issues, whether it's housing or jobs. And we really don't have enough resources in place so that those people can really rebuild their lives once they're released from prison or jail. Because in jail,
why don't they do some of that resource finding themselves? And why don't they go out and look for the jobs if they're free from imprisonment?
Well, it's also a key problem. We have about 11 million people cycling through jails every year.
Our guest is Bernadette Ravoy, who's joining us from Los Angeles. She is with the Prison Policy Initiative and one of the chapters Following the Money that you wrote about.
So we also have done research on how much does it really cost our country to be locking up this many people. And there are a few different figures that are thrown around, and we tried our best to really try and come up with a number that is most accurate, and it's still an underestimate, but we found that it's over $280 billion per year, and that includes pretrial detention that we talked about earlier. It includes health care for those who are incarcerated. It includes the commissary industry, so people buying things like snacks from prison.
I won't go on, but you should watch that video and see the charts and the global charts that have the date on them, and you could take shots at every one of those, and you'd have valid arguments.
And even, you know, the employee costs of running prisons and jails.
Again, the annual total, $182 billion. Let's get to your phone calls. Hollis is joining us from Dalton, Illinois, Independent Line. Good morning.
How are you doing? Another quick question I had is that cities that help people incarcerated, do they get extra money from the federal government by the number of people they have incarcerated, maybe to create jobs for the constituents that incarcerate more people?
So there is definitely money flowing from the federal government to local jurisdictions. I don't know that it happens exactly as you phrased it. You know, there are definitely states and local jurisdictions that will try and get more money, and there are incentives to try and make it easier for people to reenter society.
And 57,000, based on your estimates, are there for violations because of immigration, either through ICE or the Bureau of Prisons, correct?
Correct. And that is a that's been a really interesting population to look at because people who are convicted of immigration offenses, they'll be in federal prison, but then there's also a bunch of people for immigration who are held civilly in jails or in private facilities. So that's a population where they're kind of interspersed all throughout different types of facilities, which is a little bit uncommon in comparison to other groups.
Two questions. First of all, how can people follow you on Twitter, and what is your own background? Why is this such a passion for you?
Right. So I originally started doing this work because I worked in New Orleans with a man who was wrongfully incarcerated and spent 27 years in prison and then was later exonerated with DNA evidence. And that immediately made me question our criminal justice system and whether it was really doing justice. And since then, I've done work.
She takes one case and overturns the validity of the entire federal, state, and local prison and jail system. Doesn't make sense to me.
New Orleans and in California, as well as nationally.
And if they want to follow you on Twitter?
B-R-A-B-U-Y.
And this is the website, the Prison Policy Initiative, calling it the Whole Pie of 2017, a look at mass incarceration, which is our topic. Liz is joining us from Marlton, New Jersey. And we understand you're a former correctional educator. Is that correct, Liz?
Yes.
So tell us what that means.
I taught inmates at all levels, from non-readers and up through the briefly we had a college course or two to offer, but mostly it was men trying to get their GED prior to being released.
Before you get to your question, what did you see in your years working in this career?
I think there's a lot that could be reformed. Some of the students I have, they were obviously mentally challenged. A lot of psychiatric cases are in our prisons. They're not really getting handled in the proper way because they have various psychoses, a lot of neuroses as well, which being incarcerated probably exasperates. But I think the real...
I have to add this. Can any of these people talk about the harm done both physically to people and the harm to society in terms of theft and destruction and on? Get real.
Issue here is in our state, in the early 1980s, every politician ran on making the sentences stick. They felt that the judges were not using their discretion correctly. And we went so far overboard on that the sentences and the amount of time for each particular crime went up substantially. And the cost to the taxpayer, I know there's this idea that people are making money on the prisons, but I didn't see that. There are people who get privateers that come in and want to give health care, and they paid off a politician somewhere and got the contract. But the state prisons cost the taxpayers of the state and every state where you have them. So if we could reduce the time each person is in prison and focus on rehabilitation in the form of education so that they can actually, a lot of these men never had a steady job. They've never been able to run their life correctly. And that's why they get into drug trading and then get addicted and then go into doing crimes to feed their addiction.
And then it creates that cycle, right, Liz?
It is.
Yeah. Hey, Liz, thanks very much for phoning in. We'll get a response from our guest.
Yeah, so Liz really brought up a great point. There are the long sentences and the harsh sentencing that our country has preferred for a really long time and is really just now starting to question. But there's also just the amount of people that go to prison. So that is another problem. People who maybe aren't there for that long, but are still, but we also send a lot of people to prison. And even if it's just, you know, a few years, maybe a couple of years, that is really destabilized.
I think they should sentence them to the block that this woman lives on and give them an apartment right next door to her house. Wonder if she would agree to that. She might, actually.
Into these people's lives. She had another really great point about what people are like when they enter prison. So we did some research on the really low incomes of people who enter prison before they even have that prison record. So a lot of times people who go to prison are already poor to begin with. So our research found that they're about 40% poorer than the person who does not go to prison. And then that means that when they get out, they're going to be even less likely to be able to get a good job, have a good salary, because they were already disadvantaged when they went to prison.
I wonder if she's ever met a career burglar who goes hundreds of times before they're ever caught and are willing to do a year in prison because they've stored up lots of money from what the from what they benefited in their crime.
And then after that, they have this record, you know, and there's a lot of issues that come with that, whether it's barriers to certain licensing and which makes it harder to enter certain professions, like being a barber, for example, or even getting through the door in the first place, which is where this, like, ban the box movement has started, which is about trying to make it so that people who have criminal records can at least get through the interview process before their criminal record maybe gets in the way.
If you've driven around your neighborhood and large cities all over the country, there are jobs everywhere. The signs read, "We're hiring." Have you seen that? If you can't find a job now, as opposed to going out and stealing and committing crimes and burglarizing, you're not looking very hard. And, of course, a lot of them don't want to work 40, 50 hours a week. They want to two nights of work and move on from there.
Hey.
Our guest is Bernadette Raboy. She's joining us from Los Angeles, serving as a senior policy analyst with the Prison Policy Initiative. We welcome our listeners on C-SPAN Radio and on Sirius XM, the POTUS Channel 124, which also simulcasts this program every Sunday morning. So we welcome you as well. Greg from Palm Springs, California, Republican line. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you and welcome to C-SPAN. And Bernadette, this is an issue that I've had for quite some time. The Eighth Amendment not being carried out by the country, you know, it states that excessive bail, you know, citizens of this country should not be given excessive bail or excessive fines. And, you know, you can go to court any day of the week in Los Angeles, California, and you can see so many low-income people, poor people, and judges giving bail amounts $5,000, $10,000, you know, far in excess of the amount of money they make a year. And nothing is never being done about it or said about it. I mean, the country is just out of control. And I know I have experience. I've been in jail.
One, if he knows what the crime rate is like now compared to what it was 15, 20 years ago and 25 and 30 years ago. He needs to check that out. I think he's going to say that he was a prisoner. Let's hear it.
Jail. You know, I've lived in Los Angeles, and if you're a minority, you have a 70 or 80% chance of going to jail because you'll end up going to court for a traffic ticket. You'll end up $5,000. You can't pay that, so you go to jail. Anyway, someone needs to address that issue because gouging the American people.
Exactly. That is a huge problem, and it's one of the key reasons that we should also really be looking at jail reform because that's an issue that really is sort of specific to local jails where we are practically running debtors' prisons where people are going to jail because of their inability to pay fines or fees. And, you know, we really need to question in this country whether we think it's okay that we're locking people.
There are options to that. I won't go into it. It's a lengthy discussion. Not everybody that's out on bail pay to bail.
Well, that's for being poor because that's what's really happening in a lot of local jurisdictions. I think, you know, the other great point about that is it's not just money bail. So that is one issue of the inability to pay so that you can wait for your trial date from home. But then there's also just fines and fees. So, you know, that was the problem that we saw in Ferguson. People who really had very minor offenses that didn't really weren't a danger to society, you know, public order type offenses, and then them going to jail for those minor offenses because they could not pay fines and fees.
And among the industrialized nations, the United States is number one, 693 for every 100,000 citizens in jail. You can look at the statistics. And among the top 10, predominantly nations in the Caribbean or small countries, we'll show that to you as we listen to Jose from Port Charlotte, Florida. Good morning.
Yeah, I think we're a little safer than a lot of those nations that he's put up on that chart. wish you could see it.
Good morning. My question to the speaker is, I understand that your passion for this cause is due to the wrong incarceration of an individual later on, release of DNA evidence that's not more readily available and so forth. Also, the other gentleman that was just before me saying that people are going to jail for a traffic ticket, I think that these are the rare cases. I just wish to the speaker, what do you say about this comment? Look, I am a minority. I am a Cuban immigrant here. I've been here 40 years in this country, proud to be American. Why don't you have the same passion for addressing the issues that are causing part of this mass incarceration?
Thank you. We'll get a response.
I absolutely have the same passion for those issues. But, for example, one of the problems is that we're spending so much money to incarcerate all these people, over 2 million people in this country. So that is money that we're not spending on education, that we're not spending on jobs. And until we start to cut those costs, that's money that can't be used for those other services that really do relate to incarceration. Like we talked about earlier, these are people who do not have strong educational backgrounds. As our earlier caller talked about, many of these people get their GED while they're in prison. In jails, there's usually not even services like that. So these are really low-educated, low-income people oftentimes, and they haven't really had good opportunities to do better in life.
There are prisons in the United States that offer high school education and college associate degrees and probably some bachelor degrees now, particularly with online education.
And I think, you know, that is one of the changes that we're starting to see in reform. So here in California, for example, one of the propositions that was passed, part of it was about reducing some lower-level crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. And then part of that was the money that was saved was going to be used on these really crucial services like education.
And many are under the age of 18. I looked at the youth incarceration rate, with more than 34,000 now currently incarcerated in local, state, and federal prisons. Haji is joining us from Catonsville, Maryland, Democrats Line. Good morning.
Good morning. I enjoy your program very much. A few comments. I'm an African-American citizen. I'd just like to really be a human being citizen of the world. So I'd like to just bring to attention some things. First of all, historically speaking, if you look at the system for what it is, let's start with slavery beyond 600 years ago. Then you had a system, okay, and you still do to this day, which you set the slaves free, supposedly through the Emancipation Proclamation, and I have issues even with that. But then, even with that so-called freedom, what do? We went up for a vote. 40 acres and a mule with the vice president, meaning Johnson at that time, under Lincoln, who had been assassinated. And we never got the 40 acres and a mule. Today, if you equated the 40 acres and a mule law that could have been enforced back then, you're talking about $1.3 million per African household with a home and a car. African Americans don't have that opportunity. They don't have that money today. Secondly, you had a system of Jim Crow, separate so-called but equal. The system, even with incarceration, is modern-day slavery.
Thank you for the call and the comment. We'll get it.
I think he needs to do a little more studying.
A response.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. Like, there's no way to separate the history of this country with what we have now. And, you know, there are racial disparities all throughout the criminal justice system, whether it's sentencing, whether it's arrest, even the death penalty. There are racial disparities at every single level of the criminal justice system.
Has this woman checked shooting and knifing statistics in the United States over the last, 1 year, 2 years, 5 decades? Who does it?
Our last call is from Ithaca, New York. Pastor, good morning, Independent Line.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Again, a very big gratitude to everyone behind the scenes that's putting us on every day. Pastor Michael Vincent Crea, so glad to be with you and your guest. If I can make a prefatory remark for people to follow up after this wonderful segment, On the Count radio program on WBAI 99.5 FM, part of the Pacifica Network, is the only one in the world, I believe, that's all by ex-incarcerated persons and founded by the late Eddie Ellis. So On the Count discusses every Saturday issues of incarceration. Also, in Ithaca, New York, and I'm just trying to focus on some solutions before we end, we've had over 1,000 people with books given out free on Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow. And every month we've met as a whole group, and then weekly people have met in small groups to talk about the mass incarceration. Now, I want to bring up two other solutions. One, on poverty, and I've been arrested as well in protests and stuff, but I've been released on my own recognizance because I'm not one of those identifiable profile groups. But then you have someone like Khalif Broward, who was held at 15 years old for 3 years at Rikers Island and was tortured and abused, and it's been on tape. And then he went and he killed himself when he couldn't take it anymore. That was really a criminal negligent homicide by the system itself. And what we need is better representation, no bail as such for violations. And what I'm calling for 20 years, is a human rights court. Why can a property owner still bring people into court in 2 weeks' time and out of your home in 30? But we can't bring a profiling bad cop in. We can't bring an employer who pinches a woman and pays her less and says there's a glass ceiling. We can't bring in somebody like a bus driver who denied me and my service dog entry onto a bus when she was ordered by a woman flagger when there was no other buses during construction. We need to have a new system that protects our human rights first and foremost.
Thank you for the call and sharing your passion on this issue. Let's get a response. Bernadette Raboy.
Yeah, I think the Khalif Browder story is a really sad one, and it's one that I think has really been powerful in the sense that it's really shown how dangerous it can be to spend even, I mean, in his case it was years, but to spend even a few days in jail. And, you know, there are other stories like that, Sandra Bland's story, among many others whose stories do not get the same level of national attention. But we're really starting to see the ways in which
one of these things that these people can do, which I've mentioned probably many times by now, if you want to see what the criminal justice system is like, get in a police cruiser and ride with a police officer in a county out in the rural areas and a downtown and busy areas in low income home. Guess what? The people that save lives in those neighborhoods are police officers. In the worst neighborhood in the United States, only one-third of the calls have anything to do with a crime. But all we do is pick on cops. Are there cops who deserve to go to jail based on what they did? Sure there are. But there are also cops that do things that you don't understand because you haven't been in the car and seen what the facts were that caused them to take that particular action. And I'm a big believer with police ride-alongs. And I almost think it ought to be a high school requirement so that these people see what the police officers actually do. The number one motivation to be a cop in America, you wouldn't hear that from these folks, I don't think, is service to others. It's not to lock up criminals. It's to service and help people. The same thing that you would find with social workers. In fact, some people were social work, slide it over to cops. I've taught them too. Anyway, let's hear the rest of it.
Prison and jail are really risking lives. And particularly jails, we found really interesting data on suicide rates in jails and how it's those first few days after an arrest that are particularly dangerous and where a lot of people don't end up living past those first few days because of the the problems with not dealing with other issues like mental health, which is a big problem and super connected to the problems that we have with incarceration in this country.
We're going to have to stop there. It's hard work to work with prisoners, either as a probation or criminals, probation, parole, police officer, corrections officer, one of the toughest jobs in society. But these people care. That's why they take the job. No, they don't do it for the money, because you won't put up with that stuff for just the money. So they work very hard to do it. And but this particular show just sort of flew over the top in terms of what's going on. I think we would start in the woman from the institute. We should probably start with the idea, do you know how low the crime rate is today? And guess what? People are safer. Lives have been protected and not lost, and property has not been stolen, and cars have not been crashed. I mean, on and on and on, and drug people have not gone under, although that one's a big one we need to deal more with, because we did lock up the bad guys. And I don't know why people are against that. That doesn't mean we can't help them in prison. We can't help them out on parole. We can try. But did you ever know that some of these guys, time and time again, if they don't want a job, that's the least thing that they want. They want to have fun and play 24 hours a day. Okay, that's going to do it for tonight. We'll just go ahead and put that back and go ahead and hear the rest of it. There's only about 2 minutes or 3 minutes left on that particular show, but I hope you enjoy that. We're going to have Vera Lynn sing that wonderful song she sings every time on our radio show to sign us off, and it's We'll Meet Again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know where.